Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravajakacharya Sotara Satashi Srimadha Divine Grace Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskand Bibidi Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gopemanandi Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Gurung Garanga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, first chapter, text 4. Five, sorry. You sure? So you did 3 and 4 yesterday. Okay. Well, so now we got. So we're going to do 5 and 6 because 5 has no purport. Whoa. 5 has also a very small purport. Okay, we're going to do 5 and 6. I prepared 4 because I went on the. Yeah, well, I don't want to be the same purport again. I'll speak what I got, but I went on the internet and I found it said it didn't say 4 and 5. It just said 4. It just said 3. So you did 3 and 4. It didn't show that 2 verses were done. Okay, anyway, so we'll chant 5. And that's what's up there. Sutu vacha. Saevam Rishivaryo Yam. Saevam Rishivaryo Yam. Pristo Ragya Parikshita. Pristo Ragya Parikshita. Pratyahatam Sabahuvit. Pratyahatam sabahuvit Pritatma sruyatam iti. Pritatma sruyatam iti. Srutuvacha. Saivam rishivaryo yam. Pristo ragna parikshita. Pratyaha tamsa bahuvit. Pritatma shruyatam iti.
Thank you.
Vaishnavis. Sutu Vacha. Sri Suta Goswami said, Saha, he, evam, thus, Rishivarya, the great Rishi, Ayam, Sukadev Goswami, Prishtaha, being questioned, Ragna, by the king, Parikshita, Maharaj Parikit, Prati, two, aha, yeah. Replied. Did I miss something? Okay. Tam, unto the king, Subahuvit, highly experienced, Priti Atma, fully satisfied, Sruyatam, please hear me. Iti, thus. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sri Suta Goswami said, the great sage Sukadeva Goswami was highly experienced and was pleased with the king. Thus being questioned by the king, he said to him, please hear the topics attentively. And I'll just do six. I'll chant it and read the translation and purport. Shri Suku Vacha. No, I'll do this one on my own because we did one together. Sorry. Yadatu Raja Swasutan Asudhan Pusnan Nadarmena Venasti Drishti Pratur Yavishtasya Sutan Vibandhun Pravesha Laksha Bhavane Dadaha. Translation. Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, King Dhritarashtra became blind under the influence of impious desires to nourish his dishonest sons, and thus he set fire to the lacquer house to burn his fatherless nephews, the Pandavas. Purport. Dhritarashtra was blind from birth, but his blindness in committing impious activities to support his dishonest sons was a greater blindness than his physical lack of eyesight. The physical lack of eyesight does not bar one from spiritual progress, but when one is blind spiritually, even though physically fit, that blindness is dangerously detrimental to the progressive path of human life. Omaganan chinamananda shajananjana shalakara chakshurudam militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayamupagadamayam tadati swaparantikam. Jai. So apologize if I sounded a little aggro there. I surprised. But we'll try to put it all together here. So Dhritarashtra was blind from birth, but it's pointing out, Prabhupada, at least the main point of this purport is that wasn't as great a disqualification as the fact that he was spiritually blind. Prabhupada makes the point here that you could be physically blind, but that doesn't bar you from spiritual progress. But when you're spiritually blind, it does. And so he wasn't able to take advantage. Dhritarashtra was right there. He had all these great devotees around him, but he wasn't able to take advantage of their association. He wasn't able to benefit. He had Vidura. Vidura was like his brother, you know. And Vidura was always trying to give him good advice, but because he was spiritually blind, he couldn't take advantage of it. There was others were there as well, but the main one would be Vidura. So it said someplace, I mean, Artam Das Thakur says that, as it goes, Chadiya Vaishnava Seva, Nishchara Paichiki. Nobody's become advanced in devotional service. Nobody's become a pure devotee without receiving the mercy of a pure devotee. So he wasn't able to take the advantage of the association of his pure devotee stepbrother, I guess Vidura was, Vidura. And that was his main great disqualification. So we shouldn't follow in his footsteps. We shouldn't follow in his footsteps. We have to try to take advantage of a good association of people who are spiritually elevated. In the translation prior to this one, it's Sukadeva Goswami is glorifying, congratulating, and glorifying Maharaj Parikshit because he was attentive and he was asking good questions, you know. So Sukadeva Goswami was enlivened by that, you know. He felt enthused by that, and he said, "Okay, yeah, I'm going to explain everything to you now. So please hear attentively." And there's this same theme is there throughout the Bhagavatam. In the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the same thing happens, right in the second chapter, first canto, second chapter, when the sages, Shonaka Rishi is being questioned, right, by the sages of Naimisharanya. I believe it's Shonaka Rishi at that point. And he makes the statement, he says, Munayo sado prishtoham bhavadbir lokamangalam yat krito krishna sham prashna yenat ma supersediti. So he says to the sages, it's Shonaka Rishi at that point, right? He says, your questions are glorious and are of relevance to the world's welfare because they relate to Lord Krishna. Only questions of this sort can actually enliven the self, you see? So he was, same thing, he was congratulating and glorifying the sages of Naimisharanya because, you know, they were focusing on the right thing. And he himself felt he was being benefited by that because now he has an opportunity to speak about Krishna. So they're going to be benefited hearing about Krishna. He's going to be benefited because he has the opportunity to speak about Krishna. So we have to follow in. We shouldn't follow in Dhritarashtra's footsteps, but we should try to follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Parikshit, the sages of Naimisharanya. And we have a great opportunity to do that. We have an incredible opportunity to do that. In this sense, that so, I think I mentioned this in the last class again. Who among the Vaishnava community is considered the greatest devotees? You know, if you had to take a quiz, who are the greatest devotees of Krishna? Okay, but give me a category. The gopis, right? That's an obvious one. The gopis are considered the greatest devotees of Krishna. Why? What was their qualification? Yeah, which is just another way of saying all they wanted to do was please Krishna. That was their only motivation. They had no desire to please themselves. They just wanted to please Krishna. Even when they dressed up nice, it's described, in the Krishna book and elsewhere, when they dressed up nice and tried to look all attractive, they were doing that because they were thinking, well, Krishna will be pleased. Everything they did was just so Krishna will be pleased. Okay? So we should try to follow in the footsteps. In the Nectar of Devotion, it says you should try to follow in the footsteps of a resident of Vrindavan. And among the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis are the greatest, considered the greatest devotees. So we should follow in the footsteps of the gopis. Well, how do you do that? How do you follow in the footsteps of the gopis in 2021? Well, we get a hint of that. From once Prabhupada, some devotees asked Prabhupada the question, Prabhupada, it says in the Nectar of Devotion we should follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. And they said, but Prabhupada, aren't you a resident of Vrindavan? And Prabhupada said, yeah. And he said, so can we follow in your footsteps? And Prabhupada said, why not? Why not? So in other words, Prabhupada is like the gopis. You know, he's only motivation, his only desire was to please Krishna, to please his spiritual master, please Krishna, same thing. So the way we, in 2021, follow in the footsteps of the gopis is to try to always please Prabhupada, right? That's how I see it. And one way to do that, there's many ways to do that, right? But one specific thing we can do in order to do that, and it's relevant to yesterday's verse and today's verse, is that Prabhupada worked very hard to produce these books. You know, you don't get so many amazing purports like this in how many volumes, you know, so many volumes, but, you know, just automatically, it was a lot of hard work. He put a lot of effort into this to give us this information. And in yesterday's purport, Prabhupada made the statement, he said, inquiries by mercantile men in a business exchange cannot be expected to be highly purposeful in spiritual values. So in the same way, just flipping that around, you know, you have the topmost devotee on the level of the gopis, you know, Srila Prabhupada, he's producing some literary work. So you can't expect it to be on some low level. It's going to be on some high level of spirituality. Just like you can't expect, you know, highly purposeful things, exchanges from in spiritual values from the mercantile men. It makes sense that you should expect some highly purposeful, you know, statements full of spiritual values from such an elevated devotee. So in Prabhupada's books, we're getting very elevated spiritual knowledge. Divya Gyan, it's realized knowledge. It's not just, Prabhupada's not just giving us ideas. He's presenting, there are ideas, but there's realizations. There's potency. And that's why when people get Prabhupada's books, it does something. How many here became devotees as a result of reading a book, or at least that had a big major, yeah, most of us, right? I don't know what it was. You read the book. It's just the same words as you read in any other book, but there was some potency there. That's because Prabhupada is presenting his realizations. So we should, following in the footsteps of Maharaj Parikit and Sukadev Goswami, it's good to read the books and actually try to come up with questions. Try to come up with questions, because if you have questions, then you could ask those questions of other devotees more senior to you, or even on the same level like that, and it instigates discussion, and that's good. You know, it's good. It's good for the devotees, because we're going to talk about something, right? So rather than talk about the weather or how'd you sleep last night or whatever, you know, we talk about what's in the books, what Prabhupada worked so hard to give us, right? And in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, machchita machchita prana buddhayantas parashpanam katayantas chamam nicham tushanti cha romanti cha, that the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are surrendered unto me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another and conversing about me. See? So the devotees derive great satisfaction and bliss, you know, when they discuss the philosophy. And why? Because it's pleasing to Krishna. See, Krishna's pleased when we do that. Right? Krishna is particularly pleased when we pay attention and try to take advantage of the literatures that his pure devotee has given us. Actually, Prabhupada, there's one anecdote. It's not considered, well, I think it's bona fide. I mean, it's only there wasn't, how would you say, other witnesses, but Bhavananda Prabhu tells this story about how he's with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada says something, I can't remember how exactly, it goes something like this, that Prabhupada was indicating that once there was a disagreement between him and Krishna, that Krishna wanted him to come to the material world, and Prabhupada said, no, I don't, to write the books. And it's, no, that's a nasty place, I don't want to go in. And then Krishna was saying to Prabhupada, no, just it's okay, just go. I'll take care of everything. You just go and write those books. That's the gist of it. You see, so in other words, that was Prabhupada's mission. His mission from Krishna was to come here to the material world to produce these books. So Krishna's pleased. Prabhupada's pleased. Krishna's pleased. You know, the internal potency of the Lord is pleased when we really take these books seriously, which means reading them. And as I said, when you come across something that you can, you know, make a good question out of, then make a note of it, you know. Be like a student write it down, remember it, ask it to another devotee, and then you can discuss. And that's nice. Nice way to associate with devotees. It's a nice way to make friends with devotees. It's the real way we're supposed to be, you know, kind of connected with each other on the, you know, sharing our realizations and understanding of the philosophy. That's called ishtagosti, by the way, when you cement your understanding by discussing the philosophy with like-minded devotees. So this is really, you know, an important point. And as you do that, when you do that, your appreciation of the devotees changes. It increases. When you don't do that, a lot of times there's a tendency to see a devotee in a mundane way. But when you actually start discussing, you know, the philosophy with devotees, you realize, oh, no, wait a second. That so-and-so is superficially, it appears like he or she is just like this. But no. They're a devotee. They're internally absorbed. And you appreciate the devotional quality, the serving side, as Prabhupada once said, of the devotee. It helps you appreciate the devotees in a different way, and not in the bodily concept, but in a spiritual way. And that's very important. Because devotees are important. Devotees are very important. And Archita and I had experience of this over the last few days. We went to San Antonio, Texas, to try to distribute books at this conference. It's called the American Academy of Religions, and which devotees have been going to for 20 years or something like that. You know, now this year was a little different because people, unfortunately, were still afraid of this COVID virus, so the attendance was very poor. But we got great help. It could have been a big total disaster, but we got help from the devotees. The devotees in San Antonio, they fed us. They arranged for our accommodation, very nice accommodation. They themselves took a lot of books. So, you know, I got the realization that, devotees are really important. I mean, you know, you could put a lot of work into making people who aren't devotees, and that's good too. But, don't neglect devotees. Don't neglect devotees. Archita used this. I remember as we were going in visiting the first couple of devotees when we arrived, he said, I'll do the low-hanging fruit. And, there's that expression, the low-hanging fruit, what's easy to... But the low-hanging fruit is important. I'll try to, they had generally people use that with a negative connotation, but I'm going to try to present it with a very positive connotation. Imagine you're an orchardist. You have fruit orchards, okay? When I lived in New Zealand, the temple, Nuvarshan, was in an area with a lot of fruit orchards. So you're an orchardist, okay? So, as occupation is to produce fruit, okay? So as part of your job, you're going to plant new trees. Of course you are. That's natural. That makes sense. And that's a good thing to do. That would be an intelligent thing to do, plant new trees, because, eventually the old trees die off or they're not so productive. See? But you don't neglect the mature trees that are producing fruit. That would be a very foolish thing to do, wouldn't it? I mean, imagine what a foolish orchardist that would be, that he's got perfectly good fruit trees there that are like with low-hanging fruit, nice ripe mangoes or whatever, apples or this or that, and he doesn't bother to actually take that fruit, but he's just out there some other part of the orchard planting new trees. No, you got to do both. You got to plant new trees for sure, but you got to take the fruit, the ripe fruit. Otherwise, what's the point? And you have to offer it to Krishna. See, so in the same ways, devotees, we have to do two things. Yeah, we have to be concerned about making new devotees, planting new trees, like in that analogy. But we have to take the ripe fruit, which is the devotees that we already have, and make sure that they're offered to Krishna, that their service is offered to Krishna. Appreciate, nurture, encourage, and help the devotees that are already, you know, surrendered to Krishna to become up to the, you know, perfectional platform, make a complete success of their lives. That's really important. I remember when I was in school, they taught us a song, and Amla Bhaktamaj might remember this song because I was in the same public school system as him about 20 years after. And it goes, make new friends but keep the old. One is silver and the other gold. Something like that. And I used to sing it. They have that there? No, okay. Well, maybe that was just during my time. But make new friends but keep the old. One is silver. Now, the new friends are silver, right? But the old friends, you know, the devotees you already got, they're gold, which is even more valuable. Silver is valuable, but gold is even more valuable. See? So we have to do both things. We have to do both things. Sure, we definitely want to be out there preaching and trying to help plant the seeds, as that one volume of the Satsrup's biography of, you know, Prabhupada Lilamrita is called Planting the Seed. We definitely want to be out there planting the seeds and trying to make new devotees, but we shouldn't be so foolish as to not harvest the ripe fruit. You know, that's as important, if not more important. So that was a realization I got on this trip. And but now saying something about preaching. Preaching is mystical. It's not an activity of the external energy. In the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mahatmanas tumam parta daivim prakritim ashrita. Bhajanti ananyamana sogyatva bhutadimavya. That he explains that the devotees, the pure devotees, they're under the daivi prakriti. They're under the control of the internal energy. So the preaching activity is an activity of the internal energy, and that's why such amazing things happen. The devotees who do preaching, or, you know, make that effort, they experience like amazing things happen. It's because it's not under the control of the material energy. It doesn't work like things normally work in the material energy. Amazing things happen when you try to preach, and that's because it's under the control of yoga maya or daivi prakriti mashrita, like that. So it's very important to get out there and try. And I'd like to relate a couple experiences from this related to this trip. One was, okay, so we got out there, and one of our hosts was this devotee named Dhananjaya, who Amla Bhaktamaraj knows very well. When he used to go to Portland, he used to stay with that family, right? And they were remembering him very fondly. You know, when I went to their home, do you know Amla Bhaktamaraj? Yeah, I think I know Amla Bhaktamaraj, you know, for a couple of years. And so, you know, he used to stay with them, and they were remembering their nice association. So anyway, so they asked me to... one of their members was getting married, so they asked me to say something at the wedding. So it was slow where we were, you know, at the conference. So, just one of the members of the congregation. Yeah. So they asked me, so I said, okay, well, I was able to slip away and go there. So I went to the wedding, and I gave a 10-15 minute little talk about whatever, you know, the importance of marriage and Krishna consciousness. So then but I had to get back to the conference. That was the arrangement we made, that I wouldn't stay for the whole thing, but I just kind of come, speak, and go. So after giving the talk, I sat down for like 5 minutes to make, you know, not make it look so ridiculous. And then I just kind of slowly, kind of from the back, just kind of started leaving. So as I'm leaving, I'm walking past the booth where they have, I could see, this is the booth where they have all the prasadam. And there was a few girls, ladies there, you know, and they were kind of, you know, stirring around, getting things ready and whatever. And the arrangement we had was that they were going to bring prasadam out to us where we were, you know, because it probably wouldn't be ready. But when I was there about 12 o'clock. But I was thinking to myself, I already walked past the booth, and I thought, you know, let me just try. Maybe they have the prasadam now, because make it easy for them. You know, why should they have to make a whole trip out to where we are just to deliver two lunches? So I started walking back to the booth, and as I said, there were three young ladies there just kind of getting things ready. So as I'm approaching the booth, and I'm just about to say, explain about could I get the prasadam, one of them says to me, she goes, did you ever go to Cal State Northridge? And I said, yeah, I've been there. She said, did you distribute books there? Were you giving out books there? And I said, well, yeah, that's a matter of fact, that's what I do when I go there. And she said, well, you gave me one. And I said, really? She said, yeah, you gave me one. She says, I'm the sister of the girl who got married. I said, really? And then I, at that time, I couldn't remember clearly that the exchange. But then in the evening when I, you know, when I just was more relaxed, and I remember the whole thing completely clearly. It was just a couple months ago. I was set up outside the Matador Center, you know, one of those concrete tables, and I can visualize the whole thing. I approached her, and I gave her a stack of books, and she said, no, I have my sister has been into this for about 2 years. She's in San Antonio, Texas. And I said, what's her name? I asked her what her name was, and she said, what was it? Cassandra. And I said, I said, she doesn't have a devotee name? She said, no, she's not initiated yet. And she said, you know, she's just kind of new. I said, okay, well, I'll probably get to meet her sooner or later. I said, I'll probably get to meet her sooner or later because we're not that big, and, you know, it's just a matter of time. And there I was, 2 months later, speaking at her wedding. So I thought that was kind of far out. And it works out that this couple, they're really interested in book distribution. He's a teacher, and they both want to do book distribution. So my wife, when I told my wife that, she said, yeah, well, Krishna works in mysterious ways. You know, so I thought that was pretty far out. But the next part is, what happened the next day was kind of even a bit more far out. I was, we were dutifully showing up at the hall at the correct time early in the morning. We would be there at 8:30, you know, even though there was practically no people. It wasn't, you know, it was just one of those things that, because of COVID, people were scared to come. And, but I didn't, you know, I didn't know what to do with myself, basically. So I was in the hall, and it was very frustrating, you know, because there I was, you know, had all my rounds done and everything ready to go, and no people, you know. So anyway, I was having a problem with my phone. The battery was going down really fast, so I had to get out of there, you know. So I put my phone on to charge. I had finished my rounds, so I didn't take my bead bag, and I didn't take a book, because usually when I'm out and about, I just read off my phone, but I left my phone in the place to charge. So I was just out there. I just went outside, and I was just walking around for a few minutes. And then I sat down, and I was like, my mind was just reeling. I felt like even before I was a devotee, because I didn't have engagement, in other words. You have to have proper engagement. So I didn't have an engagement. I didn't have my beads. I didn't have a book to read. And I was just sitting there like, for about 5 minutes, like just my mind was horrible consciousness. Then I just started praying to Krishna really hard. You know, I got that much intelligence back. And then I thought to myself, well, you know, then I remembered a paragraph I read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita during that pastime where Kala Krishnadas, you know, was kidnapped by the Bhattataris. And in one of the purports, Prabhupada says, because Lord Chaitanya rescued him. So in the purport, where it talks about that, Prabhupada says, you know, the devotees are actually more merciful than Krishna himself. Sometimes the Lord might be hard, but the devotees are always merciful. So I remembered that. So I thought, okay, I'm going to pray to Prabhupada. So I started praying to Prabhupada. And then, after praying to Prabhupada for a minute or two, I realized, you know what, I'm just like the person, you know, that Prabhupada would tell this, give this anecdote, which he heard from his spiritual master, about a person's in a well. He falls in a well, and he's yelling, get me out, get me out, get me out. And somebody drops him a rope. And then he's still going, get me out. You know, and the person goes, no, you got to take the rope and tie it around your waist. In other words, you got to do more than just kind of be going, you know, please give me the mercy, you know. You have to do something practical. You know? So anyway, I remember that. And then I got the realization I got was, you know what? I got to turn this around. This is no opportunity here to distribute books. So I was thinking, okay, but there's a great opportunity here to read it. So why don't I just go back in there, and rather than being frustrated that I can't distribute the books, let me go in there and sit down and read Prabhupada's books. You know, this is my perfect opportunity, better even than I have at home and over here in New Dwarka, you know. So I decided, okay, I went back and do that, and that was good. So I read for about 2 or 3 hours. And then this devotee rang me up, and he said, are you going to come and talk at our Sunday program? I said, well, no, we didn't arrange that. Remember I told you I had to be here to help Archie? And he said, well, there's people are here. It would be nice if you could come. And so I don't know if I could do that. And, And, you know, we kind of left it at that. And then I got off the phone with him, and I felt kind of bad, you know, because I thought, well, you know, nothing happening here. So then I thought about it a bit, and I said, you know what? Let me go. Why not? So I just I consulted with Archie, and he said, well, yeah, sure, why not? Take a punt, you know? So I hopped in the car, drove to where they were, and there was about eight guests. He had about eight guests there in his home. And they, you know, they just were at the, sort of the tail end of a whatever program they were doing. So once again, I sat down and I gave a little bit of a class. And at the end of the class, I told them what we were doing, why we were there in San Antonio, what we were doing. And I said, well, you know, we've got this really great offer here, opportunity for you. If you want, you could have the books, like just like we're distributing to the people who are supposed to be coming to that trade show. And I wound up selling six sets. After, you know, to the people who were there. So that felt pretty good. And you know, maybe reflect on what my wife's saying. Krishna works in mysterious ways. So, but another two realizations I got from that was, one, that it's up to us, especially after, you know, you've been in the movement for a while, you have to take the initiative to be properly engaged. It's up to us. It's like, you know, just like when you're a kid and you're 5 years old and you're going to kindergarten, you know, your mom takes you there, at least my mom did, drops you off, picks you up at lunchtime. You know, it's kind of like not much responsibility for you. But as you get older, by the time you get to college, or if you make it so far as to get into like a master's program or a PhD program, you're on your own. It's up to you. You know, if you don't make it happen, it just doesn't happen. There's nobody there. There's no parent there to bring you to school. There's no teacher there to make sure you're sitting down and doing your work, you know, it's up to you. So it's the same thing in Krishna consciousness. We have to make sure, we have to take it upon ourselves to make sure that we're properly engaged. It's our responsibility. We can't expect the temple authorities to be, you know, supervising our program necessarily. You know, we have to be self-starters. It's up to us to make sure that we are properly engaged. That was one realization I got. And the other was that, just like following the footsteps of Prabhupada, the best example, don't give up. You know, don't give up. It's just like, it might be in a situation, like on that one day, that Sunday, I felt like I went from the lowest condition of material life to not perfect self-realization, but like that was one of my, you know, a great moment, you see? And I was marveling at, wow, if I would have thrown in the towel, that wouldn't have happened. But, you know, I hit rock bottom there on Sunday morning when I was outside feeling totally bewildered, but I just kind of had that determination. I don't want to give up here. I want to keep trying to surrender and do whatever I can. And Krishna just made it happen. I went from just totally speculating, you know, being in my mind, to praying to Krishna, to praying to Prabhupada, to reading his books, to going out there and distributing them. And that felt really good. And the next day, something kind of similar happened. On the Monday, we went to the hall. We showed up there again, and the same thing. Nobody was there. And Archita said to me, you know, kind of half, probably, you know, mostly out of frustration, he said, yeah, you know, you probably do as much as we do here if you just took all the books and sold them on the street. And I said, actually, that sounds like a good idea. And so we had a look at what we had there. You know, we had some sets, but we had some miscellaneous books as well. So I just said, okay, you sure? You okay with that? And he said, yeah, you probably do better. I said, well, okay, I'll give it a go. So I packed up two boxes. You know, one box had like a bunch of hardback Gitas, and then the other box was softback Gitas, and I just kind of put as many other varieties of other titles in there as I could. And just grabbed them up. It was heavy, but I just walked out. I didn't even know where I was going. I just walked out the door of the convention thing, and I headed for the sun. I knew I needed a spot in the sun. And I knew I needed a spot where there's people walking by. And within 5 minutes walk, I found what I was looking for. And I just plunked the boxes down there, and I just started. You know, I just started approaching people on the street. And by Krishna's mercy, I did them all. You know, I was able to do all the books and, you know, come back. I mean, it wasn't as good as a college campus or anything like that, but it felt good that I didn't, you know, just throw in the towel and just kind of, oh, well, you know. No, just, you know, got out there and Krishna reciprocated. I met some nice people. And, you know, and it came back, and then we read a little bit, and we went back, and that was the day, you know. And then the next morning, the same thing, basically. There were still some books left, and I thought, well, because I left, you know, I figured just in case some people do come in, but we could see now it's hopeless, you know. Nobody's going to come in. So I just packed, you know, got another box together, and then in a couple hours on Tuesday morning before we, you know, had to pack up and go, went out and distributed those. So once again, the thing I learned, don't give up. Krishna sees the struggle. You know, actually, one morning, we were in a motel, sort of motel hotel sort of thing is where we were staying. There's very one nice member of their congregation who owns a, what do they call it? One of these extended stay hotel motels. I don't know exactly what they are, but he put us up there and he let us, you know, stay for free, which was very nice, nice accommodation. So we both had different rooms. Archit is an insomniac, so we couldn't stay in the same room, and it was free. So one morning I was, you know, it's not like as fired up as being in the temple. We have the deities and nice program and the association of the devotees. So once again, the mind, you know, was kind of doing its thing. And I remembered this, I remembered something I had on my phone, you know, and it was an excerpt from a walk in 1976. Guru Kripa was asking Prabhupada, so it's the atom, is the atom a body? And Prabhupada was making the point that there's material atoms and there's spiritual atoms. And the spiritual atom is like the jiva, and then there's the material atom. So Guru Kripa was going, so wherever there's the jiva, there's Krishna, right? The Paramatma. And he said, yeah. And then so he said, so in the body, when the jiva takes the body of an atom, is Krishna there? Prabhupada, yeah. So what is his business? You know, what's he doing? And he said, and then Prabhupada said, he comes to guide rascals like you. He said, Krishna loves you so much that even when you take the body of an atom, he goes there, you see? So, yeah, and I got inspiration from that. I was just, you know, meditating on that, that Krishna loves us so much that even when we take the jiva, the soul is in the body of an atom, he's accompanying the soul to just try to guide us. And so I was trying to like meditate on that and continue just to, so anyway, the point was, don't give up. Krishna's there, and he's aware of our efforts, and he reciprocates. And it's kind of like you're not going to be able to understand how it's going to happen, when it's going to happen, but we just have to have that conviction that you. And Prabhupada himself is the greatest example of that. He wrote this letter to maybe it's Sudama. I'm not sure. But in the letter he said, when I was alone in your New York, I was thinking, who will listen to me in this horrible place? But at least I can distribute a few of my books. That is something. He said, but then Krishna, he sent you young boys and girls, young American boys and girls, one by one, for preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya. He says, now I can see it as a miracle. Otherwise, one old man with in your city of New York with barely enough money to buy his food, how could he survive, what to speak of establishing a God-conscious movement for the salvation of the entire world? And Prabhupada repeated, he said, now I can see it as a miracle. See, so, you know, Prabhupada himself, you know, everybody knows the story. Sometimes he would go back to the office of the Scindia Company and say, when's the next boat going back to India? And, you know, he went two or three times. And finally the man said to him, I don't think you're going to go back. You know, so Prabhupada didn't give up is the point I'm making. He struggled too. I mean, it's Leela, but Prabhupada showed the example. He didn't give up. He didn't get discouraged. He felt discouraged, but he didn't give up. He persevered. And at some point, Krishna just said, you know what? Have a movement here. These people really aren't qualified to be devotees. They don't, you know, they don't have pious activities in this life and in previous lives. There's really nothing. There's nothing about them that's qualified. But anyway, because you are so sincerely trying to execute the instruction of your spiritual master, you're so determined. I'm gonna reciprocate. I'm gonna make a movement for you. See, this Krishna conscious movement is Krishna's, Lord Chaitanya's gift to Srila Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada was so sincere, he forced Krishna's hand. Krishna had to reciprocate. and the reciprocation was that, you know, he enlightened the general populace from within us, you know, and some of us came forward and tried to become Prabhupada's followers. So anyway, the point is that Krishna reciprocates. He reciprocates with the endeavors of his devotees. So that's pretty much it. Anybody have anything they'd like to say or any question? Sorry, I'm planning on stopping at 20 past, but anyway, got carried away. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because in the Leelamrita, the way it's described, he did that more than once. Because finally the guy who was behind the ticket counter said to him, says, Swamiji, I don't think you're going. So he was feeling discouraged,
You have to do things to yourself in order to kind of trick yourself also. You know, to get it out of your system, get it out of your mind. So Prabhupada went there purposefully just to do that. And then once he knew what time was leaving, then he left and he forgot about it.
Right. Good for us. Thanks, Anybody else, anything? Okay, thank you very much. Gantraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.